Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Guitar nerds are teaming up with Music Nomad. Since 2010, Music Nomad Equipment Care has been making premium and innovative guitar care products used and trusted every day by top guitar repair shops, guitar makers, and touring techs in over 40 countries. Pro quality but affordable, Music Nomad is also the go-to for countless guitar players around the globe to help guitars look, sound, and play their best. After 2 years of research and development, and in a collaboration with top guitar repair shops, Music Nomad has developed the Keep It Simple setup. They demystified the guitar setup process by developing innovative precision gauges and tools combined with step-by-step general guidelines anybody can follow and set up their guitar to play and sound great. With their KISS method and their gauges, you can check the vital areas of your guitar and use their toolkits to perform your own setups. They have a 24-page instructional booklet available in 7 languages, downloadable for free, loads of how-to videos, as well as complete setup video tutorials for popular brands such as Fender, Gibson, Taylor, PRS, and more. Not only is it fun, but a properly set up guitar takes your playing and sound to a whole new level. Learn more at musicnomadcare.com. Follow them on social media with @musicnomadcare and kiss your guitar with Music Nomad's Keep It Simple setup.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by JD Short.
Hello.
And Naomi McLeod.
Hi.
Yes, exactly. Hi indeed. And welcome back, dear listener. Welcome to another episode of the Guitar Nerds Podcast. We're fast approaching the end of the year, gear of the year, stuff like that. We talked a lot about our gear of the year predictions. But, you know, it's interesting to see. One thing I want to talk about on this week's episode is, you know, listener, I don't know if you've seen. If you haven't, you definitely need to check it out. Reverb have released their top-selling products in categories for the year. And what's really cool is they've even done things like top-selling, you know, effects that were released in 2021, as well as, you know, top overall products. Apparently, that's something they've done every year. I did not know, but it's really cool, really interesting. So I thought I'd talk about some of those, because there are some very interesting and very surprising, some less surprising, but some very surprising things in that list. I appreciate, of course, you know, Reverb, I guess. Well, no, I guess it doesn't skew things. It's kind of an honest version of it, because it's so much is dominated by pre-owned and second-hand stuff. And, you know, not every retailer has a Reverb shop. So it's not like a completely accurate list to, you know, what is popular. But it's very interesting nonetheless. So, yeah, we'll talk about some things like that. And I was at the Ashdown pop-up shop again on Denmark Street this weekend, dear listener. That was a lot of fun. I mean, it was a little premature, because we definitely got a bit overexcited and were like, let's open the Ashdown pop-up shop again, and sort of forgot that we didn't have a lot of Ashdown amps until the next shipment arrives in December. So there were like 6 amps there, but we did it collaboratively with Court and Sandberg. So they had a bunch of their very cool, bases in the shop, as well as all the Ashdown stuff. So that was a lot of fun. And when I was there on Saturday, JD turned up. JD came down to keep me company, which was rather good. And we got to kind of have a go at most of the things that were there. So, some interesting revelations, I thought, about like Sandberg and some of the court stuff. How did you find the selection of instruments you got to play?
I mean, it was just, I just want to say it's really nice to be back in a shop and just spend an hour or so just playing 10, 12 different basses.
Yeah.
That was excellent. I will say, like, with the court basses, like, they just had a complete full range of anything you wanted, from a really excellent jazz style bass for right around, what was it, like 450, 500, sub 500 pounds.
Sub 500 pounds.
Yeah, it was, I mean, I think that was one of my favorites there. To then seeing, you know, like the single cut, neck through, multi-scale, 412 band EQ, onboard preamp bass, which also I really did enjoy. Like, I thought playing it was fine, but I was like, this actually sounds really good. Like, I really, really enjoy this. So, yeah. So, like, a lot of the court stuff was great. Got to play some of the, fun different pickup combinations that Sandberg has and everything there. And then, the Ashdown basses that were there, I still really like playing all those as well. So, it was really great fun just playing all the different ones. There's the other court bass that reminded me of my old... the neck through sound gear that I used to have, the Ibanez sound gear from the mid 90s era. And I was like, they're all really excellent.
There was a real Ibanez feel to some of those. I appreciate Court make a lot of Ibanez's entry level stuff. So obviously they were leaning on that a little bit, but it had that sort of satin finish, high quality satin finished wood feel that Ibanez seemed to nail a lot. All the modern courts had that, and like Bartolini pickups, Bartolini preamps in a lot of them, Mark bass preamps in some of them, which I think were the cheaper preamps essentially, but great hardware, great pickups. Most of the stuff there was at least under £1,000, if not, under £500.
Yeah, I was thoroughly impressed with a lot of the court stuff. And I have had, named and labeled court bases before. And it was really cool to play them. It wouldn't be something I would often... I would say if I were just shopping online or I wasn't actually playing in a shop, I don't know that I would have gravitated towards them. But, I know you and I talked about that one jazz bass that was sub 500 was one of the top performers of everything that was there.
I thought that was really interesting, actually, because all the Sandberg stuff was there, and we said it at the time, the Sandberg stuff was there, which they do sort of P and jazz types. There were some good like German made Sandbergs, jazz type guitars. You had the Korean built Ashdown jazz basses, and you had the court basses, which were, the Ashdowns were £1,000, the Sandbergs were £1,800. And the courts were less than 500 if we're just talking about the jazz basses. And, the courts were really good. I thought features-wise, they were the best because they had, it was like baked maple necks. The finish was really good. It had a nice boost-only active preamp in there, although to be honest I think we both agreed we just left it flat, like it didn't do that much, that preamp, but still nonetheless you can swap out a preamp. It was just feature packed. The Sandberg I expected to like a lot more because there's a lot of hype around the brand. They certainly look like they're very high quality, but actually when I came to play them I was like, I don't know that I'd pay this amount of money in comparison to what companies like Fender are putting out. Also, if you blind tested me between that Court Jazz and that Sandberg, I don't know which one I'd pick as the pricey, the more expensive one.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Yeah.
But
I was really impressed with that. Certainly with that jazz bass that they had. And then overall just really impressed. But I agree with you. Like the blind test I think would have been fun had we done it.
Yeah.
and been like, "Oh, which one's which?" But yeah, I mean that chord felt really good as well. Like I don't know that if I were playing it you would know the difference either, which is also one of, you know, is a thing that should matter less, but matters at least as much as what it actually sounds like. So
yeah, absolutely. I feel like it's kind of seeing those chords and getting to play those chords made me sort of check out the courtguitars.com website again and look at all their things for not just bass but for guitars as well, because the quality of those instruments is undeniable, and it's not a bad name, they just get glossed over a little bit as a brand. But I remember with the other Guitar Nerds hosts, we'd probably a couple of years ago now, we talked about the Sunset TC, the Court Sunset TC. And I was, you know, checking out their website and saw that they've updated the finishes in the Sunset TC. It's like a dear listener, if you've not checked it out, and actually, you know, JD and Naomi, if you haven't checked it out, it's a bolt-on single cut Les Paul Junior style guitar with a Tele bridge and Tele bridge pickup. Ooh. And a P90 in the neck. So it is this wonderful, obviously it's more Tele sonically than anything else. P90 in the neck just makes everything a little bit better, a little bit richer and thicker. But this gorgeous, lovely vintage Les Paul Junior look means, you know, you're getting something a little bit different. The headstock looks great. Finishes are lovely, open pore burgundy red, very nice. Like I can just, you know, I've not seen one in real life, but I can imagine sort of the quality, that textured quality that Court seem to nail, the same as Ibanez on their guitars. And then they also do an open pore mustard yellow, which is your, you know, your sort of Fender butterscotch style color. But I mean, they look absolutely fantastic. I wonder, I don't know what the price is on a Sunset TC. Court tend to be not cheap, but not expensive. They're, you know, they tend to be quite reasonably priced, which more money than you'd just take a wild punt on, but they're definitely extremely cool.
Yeah, looking at the Sunset TC online, I mean, there's several all coming in the sort of well under 400 sort of pounds.
What?
UK.
Three to 400, yeah.
I was thinking there'd be like 800 quid.
Sure, yeah. No, I mean, appointment-wise, I had seen them before, but I'm just checking them out again here. Like, appointment-wise, particularly with the open pour, which is just so delicious. They really look the part of something more like 700-800. But yeah, you will find them somewhere between 339 to kind of 389.
Yeah, wow.
Around the internet. So yeah, I personally, I'd stick that back in the take a punt on basket. for many. But yeah, no, super, super nice job of kind of hybridizing classic styles, I think.
Yeah.
I also think what's ridiculous is when I was looking, a lot of the images I saw online were just of the body, which is great. And so you kind of think in the back of your mind, like, there's going to be something ridiculous happening with the headstock, isn't there? Mm. Like something is
something's going to ruin this.
Yeah, yeah, it's a real like, oh, right. But no, it's great. I really, really dig it. I like the inlays too. It's like a overlaid double blocks. Kind of thing.
It's great. It's almost like a, I don't know. Like, it looks like a solitaire cards.
It looks like you have too many instant messaging and like notifications up. But
yeah, it's definitely like, I love that even the inlays, they're original. There's thought gone into that. That's attention to detail. That's not just a company, you know, sort of punting out, you know, an affordable Les Paul Junior style guitar. That's, you know,
I'm really into it. Like, I'm really into these, and like, yeah. I mean, I definitely agree with you. You know, I mean, and the whole like, well, this is, if you wanted another guitar or a guitar mm-hmm. that kind of did something else or different, like, that's easily within the, just pick one up.
Yeah, you know? Sure. Like,
I would do it sight unseen, you know, without actually playing one, just because it's, well, because I just played a bunch and I was like, yeah, these are great. Like, yeah. Of every, it's just real quality control for everything coming out. So, yeah, great.
Yeah, yeah. Dear listener, I have to say, after me and JD spent a day with Court Basses, I have such confidence in the brand now for anything. You know, I definitely... definitely consider taking a punt if you see something interesting. They did get a couple of guitar magazine editors' choices, I think, for their baritone and one of their multi-scales as well. So, you know, certainly if you're looking for an affordable multi-scale or, you know, a reasonably priced multi-scale, you could, you know, you could do a lot worse than a guitar magazine editors' choice nominated instrument. So, yeah, absolutely. They were very good. Did you get to check anything out really on Denmark Street at all? Because you know, we sort of ended up just hanging out in the shop for ages.
Yeah,
we swung around a few shops right at the end of the day. But
I mean that was most of it. You know, it's generally just one, like, it's always great. And like, when I go to Denmark Street, it's usually to see, you know, the 10 or to 15 basses that may interest me on the street, and then loads of pedals and just loads of random stuff you can find. And so, yeah, so I think most of it was, there's loads of pedals, like some of the really old vintagey ones at like No Tom and stuff, were interesting. And, you know, the old B15 in, which is there.
The Ampeg B15, that was, very cool.
Always, which was, you know, I said at the time, but that was when I was in uni, that was the amp I had in the rehearsal room, was a mid-60s B15 in. And I had they reached out after I had moved and graduated, like, they reached out to say they were, you know, replacing stuff and if I wanted it, because I said I wanted it, but it was, and I could have gotten it at the time for, I think, under $1,000 US. and it was just, it was, you know, it would have been a thing. Like, I had just moved. I was like, how am I going to ship this thing, which weighs 10 times one of the old PV bases that everyone jokes about weighing 20 pounds, you know, like, how am I going to ship this thing for under 600, you know, like, without like adding 60% on top. And so I was just like, no, I don't think I can. Also, I was broke because I was like 20. But it's like one of those things I wish I would have done now. So I always have a soft spot for like that specific. I think that one was a 64. I think the one I'm used to is a 66. So, you know, it's like that, but that still at very specific range of year of what they had. Like, I always feel a strong connection to those amps. So it makes me happy when I see one.
Well, it's iZotope's Black Friday deals, and they've really pushed the boat out this year with three incredible bundles of some of our favorite plugins. The Holiday Bundle at only $49 includes Ozone Elements, Neutron Elements, RX Elements and Nectar Elements, plus creative staples like Trash 2 and Iris 2, legendary exponential audio reverbs like Phoenix Verb and R2. The plugins on their Todd would be around $1,300, so this is literally unbelievable. If you don't use Isotope, this is a perfect place to start. Or you can elevate your production with the Isotope Holiday Bundle Platinum Edition. Upgrades include Ozone Standard, Neutron Standard, and now you can add industry-leading polish to your music alongside Nectar Elements and RX Elements, plus Trash 2, Iris 2, Stutter Edit 2, and more. Mix, master, repair, and create with ease using this versatile 11-plugin bundle. Over $1,800 in value for only $99. And finally, the Diamond Bundle upgraded to include Ozone Standard, Neutron Standard, Nectar 3 Plus, Neo Verb, and RX Elements. All the stuff that we use to make this podcast. Get yourself the gift you really want this year. The Diamond Bundle offers over $2,200 in value, and all for just $149. Check out all of these deals and more over at isotope.com or follow links in the description of this podcast.
Yeah, I mean, Ampeg B15s are absolutely fantastic. I think, you know, a lot of time they're like a studio standard recording amplifier. Yeah. Anyway, you find them all over the place. Like whatever the London studio was that I went to record the Boss Dimension Chorus demo video. They put me through a B15 for that, and it's just, you know, it's got such great color to it, but mm-hmm. you know, it can it's just at home being like with a load of hairy drivers, it is kind of cleaning up. It's just great. It's a perfect Motown machine as well.
It's one of those things like where you can take a P bass and a B15 in any any studio will have a B15 really. And you go in there and every engineer you work with knows exactly how to get a sound out of it.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those things where you're like, yeah, great. We need when you're paying hundreds of pounds per hour to do something, it saves a lot of money in the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, speaking of Notom, it's such a fantastic shop. Dear listener, if you were ever able to be in London, you know, near Tottenham Court Road and go into Denmark Street, Notom is such a fantastic shop full of... The thing I love about that shop is they have such... Well, they don't own any wall hangers. Everything's out on the floor. But what I love about that shop is you'll find something cool and interesting that's... I won't say affordable, but that's, you know, reasonably priced for something vintage. And you'll also find the extremes. Mm. I think at the time that me and JD were going in there, they've got a 1965, they've got a gold matching headstock 1965 Gibson Firebird 3 up for just under 40,000.
Oh my lord.
Pounds. Yeah.
And it is beautiful, and if that wasn't double the cost of, you know, homicide for hire, then like it's probably well worth it. Yeah,
well, dwarfing yeah. that for price is because they do currently have a 1960 Gibson Les Paul Standard at the moment in their catalog up for £189,000.
Do you think they're doing a Black Friday deal?
Yeah.
I feel like if we really nail the Patreon, we can probably just have a few zeros left.
Yeah, there you go. Well, that's it. Yeah, I mean, it looks incredible. I can't believe that there are still 1960 Gibson Les Paul standards, you know, knocking around.
It looks like it's old, but has never aged in like a weird sense.
You know? Yeah,
like, there is like no rust. There's very, very little.
This is lived under a bed, I think, in a case for since.
Oh wow! So it's not even got the sort of played through its years.
I think there's a little bit by the you know, where someone wore like a cool bracelet where they have like the, right. the pickup selector, you know, like I think that's about the only place that was worn.
Oh my God.
From what I can remember. And then like a few screw holes and stuff that you sort of see, but yeah, sure. like it's
what an instrument though. Like that is, that is well into sort of fine art type pricing that you would hear of at auctioneers, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But something that I the last time we were there a couple of weeks ago, I spotted and I asked them for a price and I was thinking about it and it's still there. They have a 1959 Supro Super in Silverburst, which dear listener is it's a 3/4 size guitar. It was very much Supro doing the Gibson Melody Maker. So it's a 12 fret join, just a humbucker in the bridge and a gorgeous tailpiece, the sort of, the shaped, I guess sort of ES-175 style tailpieces that Supro were doing at the time. But yeah, lovely, lovely sort of rectangular headstock and cream button tuners. I love that it's just a volume tone and, you know, one humbucker in the bridge. It's such a cool, vibey, like mini, you know, power guitar. I love it. I bet it sounds incredible. I didn't get to try it. It was one of the ones that they'd sort of they've put very high up on the wall. I know I said they had no wall hangers. What they do instead is wrap these sort of leather straps around the headstock and then loop them over nails that are on the walls. Really weird.
Oh,
really, yeah. Really weird that there's no like.
I wonder, has that been contentious over the years for? Well, no, like honestly, for how, I don't know, yeah, how that might put pressure on the instrument. Maybe it's better for all we know.
It's a strange shop, no, Tom. It's like it's so cool and so vibey, but it looks like a house. Like you walk into
I absolutely love that. Like, yeah. do you walk in and sort of feel like not much has changed?
No, this is it. They have obviously deliberately never ever had it fitted for being a shop. Because let's be honest, slap wall looks rubbish. Like that's not a good looking thing. So
it's an inconvenient truth. It absolutely is the worst.
Yeah, exactly. It looks awful, but obviously it allows you to display lots of guitars. And that's why they have most of theirs on the floor. But, you know, it's still, the walls are wallpapered and have like posters and artwork on them. There's a big like leather sofa as you walk in because it very much feels like you're walking into a lounge and the wallpaper looks very old. You know, it is just an old house. Like there's none of those horribly bright shop lights or anything. It's just, you know, I think there's a chandelier or whatever, but it's also very small, listener. Mm-hmm. If you've not been in this tiny sort of crammed shop that there's a sofa in for no reason, it takes up so much room.
Yeah,
the sofa. And then, you know, just to make things extra weird, there's always three staff in there. You can barely get three customers in there, but they have three staff every time I go in.
To be fair, if you have 190,000 pound guitars, you might as well.
You're gonna need one member of staff and two for security.
That is probably what it is. Yes.
Just thinking about this, I was whilst you were talking, I was just remembering something I did see. Do you remember seeing that? I think it was like a 74 Gibson Marauder they had there, that was like under like $2,000. I think it was right at $2,000.
I do not remember that.
Let me see. It's excellent. So the Marauder is the one that, like, as I was relating things to bass, has like the Gibson headstock that has the same headstock as like the Ripper and everything. So that big quasi alembic-y sort of crown. But it's just thinking about it because it reminded me of the you know, the chord guitars we were talking about, where like the TCs, where it's that like single cut slanted. Yeah,
it's very much, it's got that Sunset TC vibe to it, or Sunset Absolutely. TC has a Marauder vibe to
it. Yeah. If we're going chronologically,
yeah.
You know, like in the real world, not how we've spoken about guitars today, but yeah. I mean, I think that one, because you look at that, you're getting like a mid-70s limited run Gibson for $2,000, you know, like that, in the same shop that you can also buy, you know, a guitar that's more than a lot of people's, like, homes.
Yeah.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, and a Gibson Marauder is definitely weird, but it's cool. It's Gibson doing a Tele-style guitar. It very much is the Sunset TC, but,
yeah,
you know, they made it for 4 years. So it's, you want something, you know, a little slice of history. That's very cool. A super.
Oh, yeah. So if this one, that one was a 74. So that is the first year they started. Yeah. So it was 74, 79. Yeah. So. You get one of the early Marauders.
There you go. There you go. But yes, it's a wonderful shop, no, Tom, full of really interesting, really weird stuff. Should we talk about these reverb lists?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because they were extraordinarily interesting. Let's start with the obvious. Let's talk about the best selling guitars, because this is actually, most of this is, you know, less of a surprise. So they've done sort of best-selling, you know, electrics, basses, and acoustics. Now these don't have to be things that were released this year or anything. This is just overall. Unsurprisingly, they released the top 20 in every category. Unsurprisingly, I think you'll find, dear listener, 2021 was absolutely owned by Fender and Squire. Like, absolutely dominated. There are probably five entries, maybe less, you know, maybe four or five entries into the top 20 that are not Fenders. So it just goes to show, you know, just... Yeah. How well Fender are doing, how much they're dominating. But also, when you notice that it's a lot of their affordable stuff, how much of a great investment Fender Play was for getting sort of, you know, young, new players playing guitar. And also, you know, it's player series stuff for the top two, just how well that series is done. Because we, you know, we were big fans of it. And I think anyone who picks up a Fender player will be a big fan of it, because they're incredibly good for the money. But certainly, I remember when the guitar nerds were talking about them, when they were coming out, there was a little bit of kickback, because there was a 150-ish pound price increase from the Mexican standards to the players. And people felt that they were rebadging them and shoving a bunch of money on. They had actually changed a whole load of the features and had never seen quality like it from Fender Player. But it goes to show that people were into them, because in at one and two, Fender Player Tele and Fender Player Strat. You know, I am unsurprised, but also pleased that, you know, that Fender have managed to are dominating so much with those two. Both great, great instruments. The thing where it really gets interesting, and I was very surprised, is in at number three, it's not Gibson. In fact, Gibson don't occur to like number eight or nine.
Mm-hmm.
But number three, the PRS Silver Sky, the John Mayer signature.
I mean, Dentist had a banner year.
But
I was surprised to see that too. I mean, it's you know, it's absolutely fantastic in its own right. But to make number three means that so many people must be picking these up.
Well, exactly. If you know, two places down in at number five, the American Professional Strat, which is the closest in price and features to the PRS Silver Sky. Mm-hmm. So the Silver Sky is outselling the, you know, the number one American Stratocaster. I appreciate the Mexican Strat has pipped it, but in its price category, PRS now make a more popular Strat than Fender, which is incredible.
And it's a signature model as well.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder why that is. You know, I was speaking to Mark Packham about it. He thinks it's because PRS have such a great reputation for build quality. And this is now, if you like Fenders, if you like Strats, you now have access to a PRS build quality.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm still surprised to see it there. I'm still surprised to see a £2,000 instrument in at number three. Do you think it's John Mayer's popularity, or do you think it's the guitar in its own right?
I don't. I mean, I would say like it. Generally, I would say like it is a really good card. And what you were just saying was where you get the confidence of a PSR bill quality with, you know, like with your PRS, sorry, with your like Fender, like Strat style guitar. I mean, that's what I would say. The reason that it's the John Mayer signature that is above that, it's, I mean, it feels like it's got to be, you know, related to that status. And or maybe it, you know, it makes me feel old and clueless in that I don't fully understand how.
Yeah.
Like, I just, and maybe it's just, it's my echo chambery circles where I just don't understand. I mean, to be fair, if it was a Pino Palladino, John Mayer Strat, I'd probably get it. So that's fine.
Yeah. 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 That's, yeah, exactly. I thought it was interesting as well. Obviously, this is, you know, what's trending. Telecasters, not too many in the list. You know, the Player Tele, sure, was first. Affinity Tele, fourth. And then you got like an American Ultra Tele came in like 15th. But that's it. That's it for teles. Whereas Strats are virtually every other guitar. You've got the Fender Player Strat, the Fender American Professional 2 Strat, the American Standard Strat, the Affinity Strat, the Professional Strat, the American Standard, the old between 1986 and 2000 Strat, and the Mexican Standard Strat as well, all in the list. People are buying Strats. Strats are in.
Yeah, they certainly are. I think I think it's good to see a budget model so high up in the ranking, and I think it surely has to do with Fender finally kind of going all out with finishes in the Affinity range.
That is a good point. Yeah,
yeah. I think anyone, and I would say myself included, who has, you know, who just wouldn't be a predominantly Tele player whatsoever and doesn't want to absolutely splash on another sort of string to their bow, or maybe they want to dip their toe in the sort of Tele format and see how they feel. I think Affinity series has always been really good for that. I mean, as we all know, with Broncos as a way to maybe see how you feel about short scales, for example. Mm. But I think I'm absolutely loving, I know we disagree on certain Player Plus finishes even, Joe, but like I feel like finish wise Fender have been absolutely, they've just gone rogue, and I'm absolutely loving it the last sort of 2 years or so, and seeing that in such a budget series is a really nice touch, I think.
Yeah, it's nice, isn't it, because you think back to the Mexican and the American Standards
of the 2010s, yeah.
Yeah, and it was black, sunburst, red, like, blue, or
Lake
white.
Lake Placid blue, yeah. Olympic white, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
And they seem to have unlocked this realization that it doesn't cost them any extra to finish in different colors. It literally just means you're going to sell more. And yeah, of course, you know, yeah, the Affinity range, they've included basically burgundy mist has almost become a standard color for them.
Yeah.
And that's got to be one of the rarest, most sought-after colors that Fender have ever done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I completely agree. I love that they're expanding the color range so much, because it means that it's not just people buying an instrument for the first time. And often you think, you know, that your first guitar often is going to be looks, you know, above anything else. So offering great colors for that is important. But it also means that people that just fancied maybe something in burgundy mist,
yeah,
will take a punt on an Affinity for a couple of hundred quid now, mm-hmm, whereas they wouldn't before if it was just, you know, a Friday afternoon sunburst, as they all used to be.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like a bit like us, where it's like, or you get that, and then you realize that I pay this amount of money for the finish. It would cost me that in time and or actual money to have someone else refinish it to this color, then I can just, you can upgrade. I mean, it's the beauty of most Fender stuff, right? Is it, you can chop and change everything you want to in it, like whenever you see fit. And so you end up with, you know, a highly customized guitar for not very much. Yeah, I'm really stoked about that. I did just do the math, and it's over a third of the entries on the top 20 are actual Fender Stratocaster variants and or Squire Stratocaster variants, not even including Strat style guitars.
Yeah.
So like, it's just like, that's got to be
flavor of the year.
I would be so surprised if it were that amount. If you were like, you have Strat style, Tele style, Les Paul, and random metal guitar other category, that it would still, like, any one of those would be, you know, 35-ish%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, it could completely, like, and like in this, in the bands and the circles that I'm in, you pretty much don't see Strats at all. So this shows how unpopular all the music is that I am involved in.
Oh, don't be so hard on yourself. Everyone in math rock just wants to be a self-proclaimed freak. Yeah. I think.
I mean, if they started doing like an 8-string multi-scale Squire Strat, I think that would be pretty great.
yeah, exactly. And moving on to basses, the top 20 basses in their list, similar dominance. I guess you'd almost expect it. Would you expect it more in basses? I guess just because, you know, the precision and the jazz are such unbelievable leviathans in the bass world.
I get what I was thinking is that I was looking that there's much more variation in bass, which doesn't surprise me. Because there's the Rickenbacker shows up, like a couple different flavors of Rickenbacker. You have violin basses, you have... Thunderbird is on there, like the Ibanez Talman, which, you know, we love. Broncos on there, of course it is, you know. And
Junior Jet 2 is in there as well.
And
quite surprised.
You get like the Mustangs and the Gretsch Junior Jet. And so I think, like, if you take that as a whole, that's a lot of variation compared with the guitars, which the only weird thing in there was an ESP. And it's like, it's, you get very classic things or an ESP, which I haven't clicked on and I can't remember which one it is, and it's a single cut ESP.
Exactly. It's, I guess you're right. There is definitely more variation. Still dominance, like the precision bass coming in first and second. Fender Player, again, so in both categories, guitar and bass, Fender Player make the most popular thing. In second, the Squire Affinity, PJ this time.
I went P, PJ, and J.
Yeah, jazz in third. I'm so surprised that anything could, like, the jazz should be first or second. I'm very surprised to see it in third, and to see almost a lack of, you know, well, there are some jazzes occurring at the real bottom end of the table, sort of 18th and 19th. You've got a Fender Standard Jazz Bass and a Squire Classic Vibe 60s Jazz Bass, which I still think is the best jazz bass that you can buy. I guess just as a I think of the jazz bass as being the more popular just because it's more versatile, but certainly I guess with young players, certainly, I don't know, like, we're seeing a lot of grunge at the moment. Grunge is very, very popular, and that's more of a precision-based tone than anything else. But I'm not going to say, you know, obviously I'm not suggesting that's the sole reason the P-bass is top. Mark and Jay would obviously disagree with me. Both of them think the precision bass is the most important invention of the 20th century. Certainly, Mark Packham was going on to be going on recently about... if you listen to the when the precision bass or the electric bass first turned up in rock and roll, the amount of impact that had tonally on the genre moving over from a double bass is probably the single biggest progression that popular music has ever had.
It's as big as actual synths. I'm happy to go on for another 40 minutes about, like, how impactful the electric bass was, because it's the only one that is a completely different instrument, in that guitar is the same scale length. You just made it electric. Bass, completely different scale lengths than your 40 plus and stuff. But yeah, so I think that's great. I will just say to that, you know, Leo Fender then intentionally made it better by making the jazz. That was the whole point of making the jazz. So... you know, I don't want to argue with Leo, so.
But But, you know, Rickenbacker, as you said, JD, Rickenbacker with their 4003 and the 4003S, which is, the one with the dots rather than the...
Similar, yeah.
Yeah, it's a couple of hundred quid cheaper, isn't it? No binding and no block inlays on the S. But coming in at 5th and 12th, I was like, really? The Rickenbacker featuring 5th? That's very high up on the list for something that's relatively hard to get hold of still. They don't make an awful lot of them.
It's still made in one shop in Southern California. You know, like, they don't... The fact that you could see that without, like, a massive production facility or multiple facilities is really surprising to me.
Yeah, exactly. Of course, lovely to see the Bronco come in 16th. I think that's very cool indeed.
And you're welcome.
But actually, the biggest surprise for me is in at number 6, the Squire Classic Vibe Bass 6. Ah,
that's the biggest surprise for you. I'm not going to... You go on, because I'm also going to share my biggest surprise, which is higher up.
I'm surprised by it because I love them, but I think of it as it's almost a gimmick. Like, I guess this could be in this list because a lot of people take a punt and then sell them again. You know, so
that was my thinking on seeing it. Was that's a very punt instrument?
It's probably the same 10 basses that have just been bought and sold
in rotation. it's not that availability is even good. It's just the same little group.
Yeah,
but touring the world.
I would expect to see such a punty instrument, well put. It is a punty instrument. Mm. I would expect to see that, I don't know, maybe 20th, but not 6th. The 6th most popular bass guitar sold on Reverb is arguably not a bass guitar.
It's definitely a little left of center. I'm sure many of us have had a similar experience where we play it on its own in a store, think, oh my God, this sounds so stunning. Through pedals, sounds absolutely unbelievable. Take it home and then try to work it into our bands and spend potentially a short amount of time trying to argue that same point before casting it aside.
Yeah.
Not to be played much again. And I think it's such a crying shame because I absolutely adore the sound of bass sixes and baritones alike. I feel like the majority of players just have that same struggle to where does it sit? Where does it belong? Does it replace a guitar? Does it replace a bass?
I worked out what my problem with a bass six is recently. Mm. In that I love the way they sound, like with a pick, palm muted.
Oh yeah,
clean. Mm. I love that tone. I could use that tone all day. The problem is, in most of the stuff that I actually do, I do need to drive. I need to be overdriven more often than I'm clean. And as soon as you overdrive a bass six, it sounds like a guitar. It's when it's
clean. It deals with drive very differently.
Yeah, yeah, very differently. And I don't like that sound. Mm-hmm. I don't like the guitar drive. Well, it's a good sound, but not for the role I need to play. That's not how I need to sound. So that's why I've never been able to commit to it anywhere outside of playing, at home. Mm. Is that it's just, it does the clean thing amazingly. I love hearing the basics in football, etc. The perfect use of the bass six, but I can never get that. Never get exactly what I want from it.
Yeah. Is it as straightforward as like a string gauge thing, do you think? Is it as straightforward as maybe a pickup? Stock pickup issue, just in terms of how it handles it? Those are the two obvious things to me, so I'm curious, had you any thoughts beyond?
Me and Matt went halves on one of the Shell Pink ones.
It
still hasn't arrived. Jay got his, but of course, Jay works for Fender, so, he was able to pull some strings. But my and Matt's still has a go. I love it. Me and Matt were like, Jay, do you think, maybe you could sort us out a pink bass six? And Jay was like, oh, I'm sorry, mate. No, I don't think I can. And so we bought ours through Anderton's. 2 weeks later, Jay's like, hey guys, check out my pink bass six. Unbelievable. He tucked us up there. But so we're gonna get that, and I think maybe I'll let Matt mod the pink one, and I'll mod my Sunburst one that's been sitting around. But nice. String gauge, I did get like a custom set of strings made for it, and I went up to like a 105 on the low E.
Oh, nice. Okay.
It's that string spacing on a bass six, 105. I mean, you know, listener, you understand. It's like it's the same string spacing as a guitar. Having a 105 on your low end makes it very difficult to pick your E and A string with any precision at all, because it's just there.
Well, and with any gusto, like you're just like daintily picking.
Yeah, exactly. So I did that in order to get it down a step. I wanted to get into D standard, but I think I've just accepted now that that is not something that a bass six can do.
Yeah,
and I'll just make it sound good in E standard instead.
Nice. Very nice. Yes. One thing I couldn't help but notice as well in the rankings was a great representation for PJ, which brings me to my next shocker, which was number four, the Ibanez Micro Bass.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's the micro.
That's the micro bass at number four out of 20, yeah.
I didn't realize, yes, it's the GSRM20. I just thought it was a cheap SR. I didn't even look at it because, dear listener, it just says the names on the ranking list we've got. I didn't even think about that. But yeah, that is really weird. You're right.
Yeah, and another kind of super budget instrument as well. I mean, I love them. I really can't knock the micro bass, but I'm super, super curious who's picking them up. Are they a super popular first bass? For those maybe who are into the physically smaller instrument, are they one to dip your toe into the short scale pool with? But yeah, I was trying to jog my memory as to whether they were PJ, and of course they are, much like a lot of the Talman series as well. But yeah, great Ibanez representation.
I think it's a punty one, that one again, isn't it? That's sort of crept in unintentionally, because I'm looking back at the transaction history on Reverb.
Yeah.
And you know, they've gone for as little as £77.
It's
these
rude not to for £77.
I mean, I get the sense that, like, just I'd be curious to know if nothing else changes with instrument availability wise, all that if they would still be as popular, because it sort of feel like in 2 years time, because it sort of feels to me like it's a lot of people picking up bass to record bass who it feels to me like a lot of people who are not bassists picking up that bass to have a bass and being like, well, it's P&J, it's a brand I've heard of, this all, you know, and it seems like a bass I've seen other people play.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. It feels very, very, oh, we're doing everything at home now. I just need a bass, kind of bass.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great.
I'm going a step further, and I've actually, I was doing this on
buying one right now.
JD, I'm not Joe Branton, you know this.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I was doing this on a few that we were speaking about a few moments ago, but I've just checked in on the reviews of the micro bass, just because my curiosity was piqued. And in four sample reviews, it goes across someone who took a punt and speaks of the fun little bass, quote unquote. Another person bought for their seven-year-old. Another person said, best beginner bass out there. Such big sound out of such a little instrument. The neck alone is worth it. Finally, and I thought this one was super interesting, was I think maybe a pro player who said, hard to believe, the price of this instrument. I've played out with it twice already. My other bass guitars for comparison are American Standard Mustang and American Standard P.
Wow.
Micros, yeah, the micro's easier to play longer. Easier to play longer. So obviously for long sets, I guess maybe they're doing sort of function work or something. Yeah. And it's deeper fundamental than either Fender. Buy one, you won't be sorry. Ooh.
Wow.
Shots fired.
I mean, just for those guitar players, deeper fundamental is like the harshest thing bass players can say to each other about their instruments.
That, yeah, the claws are out when deeper fundamentals are brought into the conversation. Absolutely.
That is absolutely right. But yeah, that was the list. We won't do the acoustics, but dear listener, you know, do go check them out. It's really interesting. Really interesting to see what's there. Let's have a look at effects pedals, because it was amazing to see Fender dominate the guitars. You could almost say, well, yes, I can see why a company that have invested in Fender Play, that's of their management, their new direction, their new releases have been so unbelievably on point that they have become, you know, a shining beacon for all other companies to, you know, just witness the incredibleness that is Fender over the last few years. So it's not surprising as much as it is interesting to read. Whereas on effects, it is just crazy. I can't work out why some of the things have happened. I don't know who you people are out there buying some of these things. I have never been so off the mark. With Gear of the Year round the corner, I am so unbelievably off the mark with what is popular. So on effects pedals, Reverb have been kind enough to divide it up into pedals that were released this year, which they've done a top 10 of, because less stuff has been released this year, and a top 20 for pedals overall. So we'll start, as it's displayed in the article, we'll start with pedals released this year. In at number one, a fantastic pedal, but I haven't seen anyone talk about it. I have one here. Bruce at ADG is a wonderful human being and always makes sure ADG, sorry, dear listener, distribute for Earthquaker Devices in the UK. He always makes sure we've got anything that, you know, any of the companies he represents release. Earthquaker Devices Astral Destiny. I spoke about this pedal when it came out. I think it's incredible, but it's very niche. That's number one. We're talking about a sort of a multi-affecting reverb pedal, like an effects reverb, you know, that does sort of shimmery things or ascending octaves and stuff. Like, it's a weird pedal, you know. It's
perfect for bedrooms.
Yes, I guess it is. It's perfect for being able to strum D and then hear it last sort of eternity, for eternity.
Strum D is a note chord, yes, everyone. Yes,
yeah. value for money and time in strumming D.
There you go. Exactly. But
a very creative pedal, I would say, as opposed to straight up utility, maybe like you would expect to be quite popular. I agree, it's quite specific. Demos I've heard, it sounds absolutely incredible. Have you had one, Joe? Have you had one come through?
I've got one.
Sick.
It's
okay.
Still here. Cool. It's on my shelf. Bruce keeps asking me to send it back, but I haven't.
Bruce, if you're listening, we're sorry.
Bruce, the wonderful human that is Bruce. who's always kind and never chases too much.
Yeah, I do need to definitely send that back. But it is incredible. It's just, I don't know, again, I expect to see this 10th. It's a weird pedal. You know, I'm expecting to see, I don't know, the Boss HM2W or you know, something like that first. Something functional, something that is globally popular. Maybe a reissue of something, or, you know, a new version of something that is popular. Not something as weird as that, but yeah, in at number one. And they managed to get number one and number two slot as well.
Yeah, and the number two is the Boris collaboration one, right? That's the Zumatas, right?
The Zumatas, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that one. I mean, that's one that I've had in my... maybe I should take a punt on one of these, because I love Big Muff style stuff, and it would just be really cool to see. And I love those, you know, like the early 70s Muffs, which again is a piece of gear that I gifted to a friend that I applaud how good I am as a human sometimes to other people, but not myself.
But yeah, I mean, it looks like a great pedal. I've not got to try this one out, but you know, I guess it's good that. Yeah, a Big Muff is in at number two, essentially, isn't it? You're like the latest version of a Big Muff has made it in at number two. So, of course, that wonderful fuzz drive, that legendary pedal, you know, responsible for so many tones, is in at number two. That's good. But incredible to see Earthquaker Devices in at one and two, and testament to how that brand have gone from, like a few weeks ago, me and Matt spoke about watching the Juan Odorete rig rundown that he did for Premier Guitar, where he's got a like pre-production, one of the first Earthquaker Devices pedals before they'd really even settled on a logo. And he mentioned how like a fella, as in the, you know, the guy who owns Earthquaker Devices, gave it to him after a gig and, you know, asked him to try it out. That's where Earthquaker Devices started out, with them, you know, just handing pedals to sort of semi-famous bass players at a show, to now being the first and second most popular new effects pedal on the biggest buying and selling guitar platform in the world. That's incredible.
I mean, the other thing is, like, I mean, you probably know this too, like, dealing with everyone at Earthquaker is, like, they're all such nice, genuine people that you can't help but want everything good to happen
absolutely
for them, you know. And so it's just like, it's like seeing that has been like, that's incredible, and it is like a really, really good achievement.
To see incredible gear and in on any industry level to kind of noticeably see a great team behind it is, yeah, it certainly makes it all the better to see such successes as coming in top of these sorts of lists. Yeah. I think Earthquaker have just been so super creative in everything they've done. I feel like they've just nailed multiple aspects with just about every release. They were one of the first brands, certainly, where I really started to pay attention to artwork in terms of current releases. So in the last sort of like 6-7 years, etc.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder how responsible Earthquaker Devices are really for the success of boutique brands as a whole. I feel like they were they were one of the early ones, because I think, you know, certainly the ones to hit, I'm sure, you know, JD, how boutique brands hit the UK and the US were very different. But for us, it was, you know, Pigtronics and Zvex were the first non, you know, Boss and Electro Harmonix brands that we were seeing coming over. And you know, whilst they did fine, Earthquaker were the first ones to seemingly do incredibly, to make weird fun pedals, but become what seemed like a big company. I know they're actually still a relatively small, you know, company. But yeah, incredible for them to dominate. And for third and fourth place, for another boutique company, Walrus Audio, to come in with, and this is the, in at third, the second reverb we've got on this list. I guess the Astral Destiny is technically a reverb. The Walrus Audio, the Mako, is it Mako or Mako?
I always thought it was Mako.
Oh, Mako, let's go Mako. Yeah, let's go Mako. Yeah, that would do. Their R1, which is their high fidelity reverb. But crucially, I think with this one as well, that's a £320 pedal. You know, that's a pretty premium effects unit to be in third, the third most popular new release, according to, you know, how people have purchased on Reverb.
Yeah.
And right next to it to get their ACS as well. Which is their amp and cab simulator, which, you know, goes to show, it's of course... Of course, we are seeing results of the pandemic here. You know, people are playing more at home. And the ACS, I think, was one of the... Yeah, I think it came out before the Iridium. No, it can't have come out before the Iridium, because the Iridium's not on this list and it is on the other one. So I guess, I mean, it's nearly a £400 pedal.
Yeah.
You'd expect... Oh, I guess it is... It's you can't judge it because it's not in the same list as the Iridium, but I'm surprised to see it being this, you know, a £400 amp and cab sim in the top five which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, I think it's just really interesting looking at what's in the list, because you don't see, because even, I mean, so fifth, just quickly, fifth is way huge, sixth JHS, seventh, eighth Boss. That's the first, like, big company, really, you know,
yeah,
like, that
you
would see is, like, 7th and 8th, and they're the only two pedals from the big pedal manufacturers.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, there's no EHX on this. There's, like, nothing else. It's just, like, that's, like, from the traditional big pedal manufacturers, I would say. Like,
yeah.
Such an interesting development to actually look at the data of it. As opposed to just being like, I feel like everyone's buying Earthquaker, but now they're so, yeah, no, they are. And instead of other brands, because you sort of always think like, yeah, if you buy 10 pedals, you're going to, a handful of them are going to be Boss and EHX, because, I mean, let's face it, we all have, you know, limited amounts of money sometimes. But then, like, also being like, yeah, and you would expect like an Earthquaker or something, I would think. It's really interesting to look at.
Yeah, it is. I feel as well, I don't want to be the one who always harps on about budget gear, but here I am. Interesting, I thought as well that there aren't any kind of super budget pedals in this top 10 either. Obviously, as you just touched on, JD, obviously Boss and EHX are known to be, you know, the big and the affordable companies. But like, this could be my release radar being way off for 21. But like, I would have expected to maybe see some brands like Moore in there, some brands like TC.
Yeah,
I mean, I do think this is like, you know, if you think like globally, like, I mean, in both senses globally, but like the pandemic, it's like without being able to go to shops and play amps or guitars, you know, like it almost feels like, well, I'm probably guitar. I would like to see overall sales numbers, sans Fender, let's take them out of it as per discussed earlier, but like look at those overall numbers and just say like, is this the time where people weren't just trying to get like a random phaser
for a song? Yeah, because, for sure, you know, does all of this represent more informed choices where people had that bit of time to do more research that they couldn't have before?
Yeah, or they just, you didn't want to drop $2,000 on a guitar you hadn't played, but you could spend $300 on a pedal that you haven't played, or you're like, you know, actually I really like it, or you've had your, you know, your multi effects or any number of like plugins or amps, you know, like, you know, like modeling VSTs and stuff that you could play and say, you know what, I actually do really like, you know, I really do like phasers. What's the best phaser that I can get in my price range as opposed to, yeah. So basically what we both said, but
Return of bass guitar nerds where everyone agrees and wishes each other well at the end.
I do think it normalizes a bit more when we get onto the next list, which is best overall, we'll come on to in a bit. I think actually we'll do that on the Patreon, because we are coming up to the end of this week's episode, dear listener. But it normalizes a bit there. So I do think this list, the first list for releases from 2021, is also a result of, as we discussed, like Naomi, you know, last week on the Gear of the Year predictions, there hasn't been a lot of new stuff for various reasons from a lot of brands. So this is unusual. It is an unusual selection of pedals. Nice to see. So as JD mentioned, 7 and 8th were Boss. That was the HM2W, which only just came out. So that's incredible.
Quick.
That it's gone straight
into that spot.
You wonder, like, give it a few more months. I think that was the sort of pedal I expect to be winning something. It's, you know, it's legendary. Everyone wanted an HM2 Wazacraft version. Yeah. You know, it was a smart release by Boss. And then the other Boss pedal is the SD1 40th anniversary edition. What? Like, you're talking about the same pedal in a different finish for a bunch more money. Like, I expect that to go to collectors. I don't expect that to hit top tens. So it just goes to show, I doubt that many did sell. I imagine just not a lot of new stuff came out, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think about it. I was trying to think, like, what new stuff really did come out that was of, like, what we would say, like, more affordable, big, you know, big brand range, you know, like, was it a thing? I was like, you know, we really do need to innovate in our 60-pound chorus stroke envelope filter, you know, yeah. Or is it, yeah, we have already got 12. Someone will, if they want one, they'll get one, you know? Yeah. Like, anyway, yeah.
Well, I,
you know what I mean.
I do. I was just looking up my little list of things that came out this year to see, you know, if stuff that I was not necessarily surprised not to see in there, because a lot of it's niche, but other things that were great. No Boss IR200 or SY200. Admittedly, I guess they didn't come out that long ago. You know, I guess a lot of the stuff is niche, but the Boss Tone Bender, I don't know if that is that's technically, I think that is just this year. Yeah. Maybe something like, you know, Jackson Audio, they released that fuzz, the modular fuzz. Yeah. That came out this year. Benson released a fuzz. I mean, actually looking through this list, a lot of the stuff is niche, so maybe wouldn't get a top 10. I mean, I mentioned it last week, Naomi, but the Solid Gold Imperial fuzz is, yeah, absolutely for me, the best thing I've plugged in this year. So, and also, you know, I'll talk about it next week on the podcast, dear listener, but again, sent by Bruce, I got a KMA Guardian of the Worm through, which, yeah, I know on Toman has been one of their best-selling pedals, which I am surprised by, because we're talking about an expensive, like a £300, essentially an HM2 with a noise gate on it and a bunch more controls, like a graphic and stuff like that. But
it looks really cool.
It looks amazing. It's obviously very well timed to release a Dune themed pedal, and I wonder how much Weyhuge and their Atreides benefited from.
I will also say I have had an uptick in like Spotify and everything else plays.
Oh, of course, because bass
very good.
Bass doubler is JD's solo stuff is all Dune inspired. So it's a good time for Dune style stuff. But you know, even that, the Guardian of the Worm, fantastic pedal, is very popular on Toman. Obviously, I'm just, you know, that didn't make it in there. Thorpey, you know, nothing from Thorpey in there. I know they're a niche brand, but they're certainly extremely popular. But an interesting list overall. That is all the time we've got on this week's regular episode. We're going to go across to the Patreon now, dear listener. You should come and join us. We're going to talk all about the top 20 best-selling pedals overall on Reverb, so it doesn't have to be released this year, and we're going to see how this is shaken out and what classics are still featuring in the top 10. But do come over and join us. You can become a Patreon supporter for as little as $1 a month. At the dollar tier, you get this episode ad free and early, which is, you know, almost a bad idea at the moment, because, you know, you got all the Black Friday deals in the ads this week. $5 gets you access to the Patreon special and our entire back catalogue, and the $10 tier gets you the lot, plus I'll sing you my thanks at the end of every episode. You can find us on all your favourite social media platforms and join the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook to get involved in our weekly episode discussion. Thanks for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Good, Brian. Bye.
Steve Davis and Daniel Walker, Ben Harder and Troy Brown, Holly Simpson and John Cutaway, Eric Vaughan and Russell Ealing. You are the Guitar Nerds. Talk to your backers. Patreon is a brand Guitar Nerds. You are. Yeah. Ty Allen, Yogi the guitarist, and Kyle Harris, O'Cloud, Lifter, Joe Hobart, Sean Hughes, Brian Hanson, Shane, and Eric Heber, Jimmy Wax, and Samuel Frost, Brian Ainsley, Gavin Vanderlinden, Andy Badley, Robert Butterworth, Scott Arting, Marcus Al, Kadawaki, Simon Gilmore. Robson and Christian Lund Hansen, Keith Adams and Eric File, Joe Puttick, Jack Cutmore, James Dore, Abe Matthews, Ken Sayers, Old Guy to be at the band, and John Anglin, Ross Edwards, Nate Nagel, and Stephen Burke, Aaron Sherman and Dave Lee, Jake Gray and Scott Kennedy, Christopher Lawson and Blake Wiley, Derek Hilton, Rob Norvig, J.D. Shore, Steve McElhenney, McKenzie, Babbage and Robert Smith, Scott O'Brien, Paul Carrigan, and Bull Gravy.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.